When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Hey, I want to welcome a new sponsor to SliceOffice.com. It's the attorneys at Gingrich, Thompson, and Walks. They get results, whether it be $3.75 million to a developmentally disabled man who was rendered a paraplegic in a van semi accident, or $2.9 million awarded by a jury to the parents of a newborn infant who was injured during birth, or $2.5 million to a man who was injured by a defective shotgun. They will give you the time that you and your case deserve. Stay local. They have offices in Eau Claire, Madison, Milwaukee, and Waukesha. They're easy to get a hold of. It's gtwlawyers.com. That's gtwlawyers.com.
Welcome to another podcast. It's SliceOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at the Operating Engineers, Local 139, Madison Firefighters, Local 311, Madison Teachers, Incorporated, and of course, Madison Teamsters, Local 695. Joining us now, John Nichols, Associate Editor with the Capital Times, and obviously, writer for The Nation. John, how are things going in our democracy? If de Tocqueville would write a new book, Democracy in America, Part 2.
Well, with all due respect to de Tocqueville, he was traveling across the country when the country was young and fresh. And I don't think America's feeling all that young and fresh this week.
Oh, we're in the day-old bread section, huh?
We're like you know, milk at the sell-by date. I mean, the country looks disastrous. You know, like kind of like it's just allowed too many things to crumble and go bad, right? And so we end up in a situation where I was doing a radio interview earlier this morning, and there's a friendly host, blah blah blah. But the person said, "Well, just to play a little devil's advocate here, you're saying that impeachment of the president's a good idea, but really, you know, what they're talking about is, you know, he's on the phone talking to a foreign leader, trying to advance his reelection prospects. Don't presidents, haven't presidents for years now been on the phone with a corporate leader trying to advance their reelection prospects, or a foreign leader? It's just who we are now, right?" And, you know, it was a fair question. And I also have to pause and think for a second. If that is who we are now, right, become this, like, just kind of, like, deeply corrupted, dysfunctional country where, you know, somebody gets a little power, they use it to maintain that power at, you know, tremendous abuse to the political processes and the governing processes. You know, we've become pretty much what we revolted against in 1776. You know, we have elections, and that's good. But, you know, the British had, you know, in 1776 had some elements of democracy. The problem was that they had a crazy king running around doing awful stuff all the time. Ultimately, our choice, when we had to submit to that crazy king, was to have a revolution and leave, form a new country. One of the geniuses of the new country was that we established systems to deal with it so we didn't end up in that situation again. And one of those structures, one of those systems, was impeachment. And so we get to this core concept, I think a pretty important one, which is, if we don't impeach Donald Trump for this, then that question I was asked, yeah, the answer is, yeah, that's pretty much who we are.
Well, isn't it remarkable? You know, we're both middle-aged, and yet three times we have had this in our lifetime.
Yeah. It's be coming to a head a little more.
Although this, you know, I heard somebody say yesterday, you know, obviously what Trump was doing by withholding military aid to Ukraine was significant, and that Russia without Ukraine is just Russia, kind of a third-rate player. Russia with Ukraine has far more power because Ukraine has resources. You know, I hate to put this in such a cold way, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
You know, there's kind of a bottom line here. So
yeah, there is a bottom line, but it's not like a new one. Let's be honest, right? You know, I mean, why are we nice to Saudi Arabia?
Right, right. Well, and I'm not, I'm certainly not comparing Ukraine to Saudi Arabia at all. But it is a remarkable situation. All right, let me play just a little bit of the coverage yesterday from NBC.
Alexander begins our coverage. Late tonight, President Trump firing back.
No push, no pressure, no nothing. It's all a hoax, folks. It's all a big hoax.
The president defiant following the White House's release of this five-page memo detailing his July phone call with Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky.
It's a joke. Impeachment for that? When you have a wonderful meeting or you have a wonderful phone conversation?
But Democrats say the president's words amount to an impeachable offense.
I'm glad the president released this transcript. But it is absolutely devastating. If President gets away with this, I'm not sure what checks and balances remain.
That call begins with President Trump congratulating Zelensky on his election victory. The president, who at the time was withholding hundreds of millions of dollars of military aid, emphasizes that the United States is very, very good to Ukraine. When Zelensky says he's thankful for the U.S.'s military support and expresses his desire to buy more military equipment, President Trump says, I would like you to do us a favor, though, asking for Ukraine to investigate matters involving the 2016 election meddling inquiry. The president saying, I would like to have the Attorney General, William Barr, call you or your people, and I would like to get to the bottom of it.
Notes of that call indicate the president of the United States shaking down a foreign leader, essentially undermining the national security of this country for a personal political gain.
Tonight, Democrats...
Favor, though. The word, though, has quite a line under it. The fact that he used the word, though. So, now we have the Department of Justice and we have the State Department dragged into this. You know, Republicans have been throwing the word deep state around for a long time. This is much bigger than just the president of the United States now. We have an attorney general and a secretary of state that could be wrapped up in this.
Absolutely. And I think that this is a really big deal, one that we should wrap our heads around. Trump did something yesterday. Talk about it. It's so much fun, actually. And I say fun because I don't think this is a constitutional crisis. I think impeachment's the cure for a crisis. So finally, you know, it's like going to the doctor and finding out what you can do to get better. And so I kind of, when I say fun, I'm not gleeful about it. But there are so many sort of telling, instructive, and bizarre things happening. And one of them yesterday was the Agnew moment. And I refer, of course, to our, you know, most remarkable vice president, Spiro Agnew. Nixon famously, within Nixon's inner circle, they referred to Agnew as impeachment insurance, i.e. that Agnew was such a horrible, corrupt, awful man that and such a right-wing fanatic. He became such a right-wing fanatic that, you know, Nixon sort of thought, well, you know, I've always got Agnew to rely on here. Right, you know, and then Agnew, of course, got pulled out of the game. Well, did you hear yesterday when Trump said, you know, oh, yeah, they're looking at everything. You know, they're going to be looking at Pence's calls to the Ukraine.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, that's the Agnew defense, right? He's basically saying, you know, man, if I go down for this, I am not going down alone. And so you social conservatives who might think, maybe this is a chance to get rid of Trump and slide Pence in as president, don't think that way, because rest assured, if what I did is enough to take me down, I know stuff is very likely to take the rest of these guys down. And so what you find is no honor among thieves, right? That this is a bad bunch of people with a lot of bad stuff coming out. And then we get to the next stage of it, which is the really important one. And that is that, as we have said, you know, Donald Trump has two personal attorneys, right? One is Rudy Giuliani. And the other is Attorney General Barr. They both clearly represent Donald Trump and in no way represent the American people. And yet, when you look in the transcript or the notes from this Trump's conversation with the Ukrainian leader, the Ukrainian president, Trump repeatedly comes back to, so we're kind of, sort of seem to be on the same page here, talking about maybe, looking into this Biden stuff or something like that. So I'm going to have Rudy Giuliani and, Mr. Barr give you a call.
Here's what's remarkable. Giuliani telegraphed that he was going to the Ukraine to do that very same, the very such thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was out earlier this summer.
Yeah. No, there is simply no doubt.
Why would he do that? Why would he telegraph that?
There's a lot of evidence that suggests that Rudy Giuliani is kind of just flying around saying whatever the hell he wants.
Well, speaking of that, this is a little treat for you. This is Rudy arguing with Christopher Hahn, a liberal, on the Laura Ingraham show the other night.
Irresponsibly said.
Oh, please.
Yeah, well, you actually usually say incredibly stupid things.
You're a public figure.
Yeah, and by the way, do you have any idea that the State Department...
So then you know the libel law.
Hold on.
Shut up,
Rudy.
Shut up.
Okay, hold on.
Shut up. You don't know what you're talking about.
Chris, you don't know what you're talking about, idiot.
I do.
The state... No, you don't. You just lied.
Mr. Mayor, I wish you would stop.
You lied, my friend.
I wish you would stop, Mr. Mayor.
Well, why don't you tell him...
Why don't you tell him... I wish you would stop.
Why don't you tell him to keep his mouth shut so we can tell the truth?
Yeah, Chris, just let Rudy...
Just keep your lying mouth shut.
Then you can respond.
Okay, he said...
How's that sound, huh? That sounds like America's mayor.
Yeah, it's a winner. He's a good man there. Hey, and then what's also good is, you know, it's sort of like calling in your assistant. Laura, could you tell him to be quiet there? who is the boss of the show? what is the point? If you're the host of the show and, A, you've got a guy yelling idiot and shut up, right? And you've got another guest who is saying, I don't think you're right, Mr. Mayor. I wish you would stop, and stuff like this. And who do you, in that circumstance, at the very least, don't you just tell them all both to calm down?
Of course not. Not on Fox.
You're like, no.
Well,
I want to hear a little more from the guy yelling idiot.
This whole situation is become big trouble for Fox. Listen to this.
And there's still really no consensus on what major parts of it mean. For example, legal experts appear to be split, even tonight, about whether the president's phone call with the Ukrainian president was illegal. So we wanted to get to the bottom of that, obviously. So last night, we asked Joe DiGenova on the show. He's a former U.S. attorney. And we put that question to him. He said, no, there's no evidence it's illegal at all. Well, that statement and some accompanying statements caused quite a firestorm. And so we've asked Joe DiGenova to come back tonight for an update. Joe, thanks so much for coming on tonight. So I want for our viewers who are not familiar with what exactly happened to know. So here's a quick update. So yesterday, Judge Andrew Napolitano, who is a legal analyst at Fox and a very nice guy, I will say, I've always liked him, went on one of our daytime shows and declared that the president's phone call with the head of Ukraine was a crime. Here's what he said.
It is a crime for the president to solicit aid for his campaign from a foreign government.
So that would be that to which the president has admitted is in and of itself a crime.
Yes.
So that definitely got our attention, of course. It's a crime. And so I asked you, because you prosecuted a lot of crimes, and for our viewers who didn't see it, here's what you said.
Well, I think Judge Napolitano is a fool, and I think what he said today is foolish. No, it is not a crime. Let me underscore emphatically that nothing that the president said on that call or what we think he said on that call constitutes a crime. And even if he had said, you're not going to get the money, it would not be a crime.
Well, apparently our daytime host, who hosted Judge Napolitano, was watching last night and was outraged by what you said and, quite ironically, called you partisan. Here's what he said.
A partisan guest who supports President Trump was asked about Judge Napolitano's legal assessment. And when he was asked, he said, unchallenged, Judge Napolitano is a fool. Attacking our colleague, who's here to offer legal assessments on our air, in our work home, is repugnant.
Yeah, you brought this into my home.
I like how I like how Tucker Carlson refuses to even mention Shep Smith's name.
One of our
daytime hosts.
Who was so very concerned about people. So often he goes weak. You know, his arguments are, dare I say, humane.
It's pretty funny because if you remember, President Trump dissed Joe DiGenova. DiGenova was up for a job, and Trump basically said, "No, you look too frumpy. You don't look the part. You're not from Central Casting."
But you know, I just want to say, Joe DiGenova, you know, he could handle that. One of the things about Trump, the people around Trump, the fascinating thing is, once you've come into that circle, you've accepted that you're not going to get a lot of respect, right? I mean, I don't want to make this all about Mike Pence, but really, I mean, if you're Mike Pence and you're this guy's vice president and you stand up for him every place and stand behind him all the time, and you, and the president's out there, you know, and he's in a little trouble. He's like facing impeachment prospects, stuff like that, and he goes, what about Mike Pence? You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, it's worse than Game of Thrones. It's like, you know, Game of Footstools.
We'll take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at SliceOffice.com.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SliceOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SliceOffice.com.
Welcome back to SliceOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works and our friends at Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. So, John, obviously there are enough votes now to move on with this proceeding. If the Speaker, in fact, decides to, keep going with this, there's probably enough votes for impeachment now. This train's leaving the station. And
can I just say, they had a vote. You know, the incredible thing was, and I think people, it's getting lost in all these memos. And Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader, put forth basically a condemnation of impeachment, right? They voted on it last night, a week and a half. And the Democrats were united. It was like 235, roughly, Democrats, you know, rejected McCarthy's attack on the impeachment inquiry. Now, that doesn't mean that every one of those Democrats is going to vote for impeachment. I mean, there may be a few who stray off.
Ron Kind.
I suspect even he comes around, but whatever. You know, there may be some strays. But you'll also have Justin Amash over, and frankly, I think it's ultimately possible one or two of the retiring Republicans come over. So, I mean, I think we can kind of accept at this point that barring some amazing revelation, right, something that none of us can see coming, there's a really good prospect that before, I would argue, maybe I'm wrong on my timing here, but I would argue before Thanksgiving, I think there's a really good prospect that Donald Trump becomes the third president in American history to be impeached.
So what about the cover-up? Because now, I mean, as we record this podcast on Thursday morning, we've got the Director of National Intelligence up in front of a House hearing right now, and then we've got the whistleblower complaint is basically saying the White House officials acted to lock down the record of the Trump-Ukraine call. Well, that goes to the cover-up being worse than the crime? Well, I don't know. In this case, I think they're both equally as bad.
Yeah. Well, there's also the revelation today, I think it's Washington Post, that apparently there's been a structure within the Trump White House to take potentially controversial stuff and put it into, you know, sort of more secretive control spaces or whatever. You know, what little I know about how you hide stuff. But it's starting to look like there's a protocol in this White House for stuff that you know could get you impeached or whatever, or you know is really, really bad. And if that is the case, right, that's you know, that becomes a focus, right?
That becomes like the Nixon tapes.
But because of the Nixon tapes, it also becomes sort of like a room that anybody who walked into is almost certainly a criminal.
There's something kind of being overlooked here. You tell me whether you think this has some potential of maybe leading us down another road. You know, I personally believe that the moment that President Trump was standing next to Vladimir Putin and dissed his own DNI secretary, Dan Coats, with the information implicating the Russians in the 2016 election, that was a moment where Donald Trump should have been impeached right then and there. He was clearly not operating in the interests of the United States against a foreign adversary. Who quit this summer? Right around the time, who announced his retirement? Right around the time all this was happening, it was Dan Coats.
And do you know something else, by the way? Did you know that the DNI guy who's testifying on Thursday,
Joseph McGuire?
You know, one of the things he said, and maybe there's clarity on this, but I think he seemed to be suggesting that the whistleblower is not currently working for an intelligence agency.
I did not hear that part.
Isn't that interesting? Well, I mean, it couldn't be Dan Coats, right?
Wow.
I know that couldn't be. But boy,
that is fascinating. And I found a piece.
Because we have to stop. We have to stop on this concept here, Sly, because that would make Dan Coats Gandhi.
Well, isn't that interesting? I mean, I was never impressed with Dan Coats as a United States senator, but I do know he's a patriot, and I do know that he carried out his duties as best he could in a horrible situation. I know he loves his country, and I know he wasn't happy about this administration. Interestingly enough, it was Mike Pence who dragged Dan Coats into this this crazy situation.
Yeah, of course.
So,
it is.
So evidently, Coats is refusing to. I found a piece in one of the Indiana newspapers. Coats is refusing to talk about his time as director of national intelligence. He's not saying anything about it. Well, isn't that an interesting piece of the puzzle?
Yeah, and I am sure that he's not the whistleblower. I just want to say, I understand that.
How do we know?
That would be too good. That'd be like asking for two Christmases. Right.
Well, there are two Christmases. There's the
Greek Orthodox.
Right.
Okay. Well, all right. So, but what I'm going to suggest is this: that what I'm really trying to get to is a kind of a deeper concept here, and that is, if indeed, as you suggest, Dan Coats is a patriot, and this whistleblower is somebody else, almost certainly this whistleblower knows Dan Coats, right, and might well have. You know, even worked around him. Who knows? And so as this inquiry moves forward, it strikes me that there's a very good possibility that the most important testimony won't be that of the whistleblower, but it could well be that of Dan Coats or someone like him. I'll probably say Dan Coats. What an amazing moment that might be if Mr. Coats was called by a House committee to testify in public under oath, and he chose to tell the truth. Again, except that he's probably not the whistleblower, suddenly you really would have him in the John Dean role, right? The person from the inside saying, yes, you know, what you're hearing is true, and it's a disaster. It's bad for the country.
You know, it's funny, we have the and they're not really the transcripts, they're the notes from the one phone call with Zelensky. There's seven others.
Right off the bat, there's a whole bunch of stuff here that we don't have yet, right? And One of the things that is important to understand is that while Trump has broken most of the norms, right, one of the things that I was struck by in the transcript was that the spelling of Zelensky's name, I learned, because I'm no rocket scientist on this stuff, it looked to me like it was spelled wrong, right? And, you know, they had two Y's on it. And then somebody informed me, who actually knows about stuff, that no, that's really the official way if you do it, you know, transliterations or whatever, you know. But so whoever was typing up the transcript actually was very much in the know, right? And the important thing to understand is that there's a whole infrastructure of people around a president when a president places a call to a foreign leader. There is the people who make contact. It doesn't usually happen, just pick up the phone, right? And so we have to see this call in context. And my suspicion is that there were diplomatic figures and political figures, whatever, who talked to Zelensky before and after. And we want to know what they do and what they said. And one other element here, too, in the transcripts, we see repeated references to this idea that there are going to be follow-up calls from Giuliani and Barr and maybe others. Okay, this is starting to get really interesting here, because were there follow-up calls? What was said? How was, you know, what all happened here?
You know,
was it a direct call to the president? Was it a call to his aide? But you start to peel this apart. I don't want impeachment to get too complicated. I don't want it to go on for 2 years. I want it to happen quickly because I think it can. But what I am telling you is that just in simple assessment of this, we see that what we've got so far is less than the tip of the iceberg.
And yet we have a foreign player involved who is not going to remain static through all this. What will happen? What's going to happen? What will Russia be doing with social media? What's Russia doing right now to interfere with our 2020 election? That we have another moving component in all this. By the way, one more thing that I learned, and I'm a member of a Ukrainian Catholic Church, and I should know this. Yeah. Evidently, Ukrainian people pronounce it Kyiv. The Russians are the ones that say Kiev.
I heard that just yesterday.
I didn't know that.
You and I are learning things all the time. You
know, well, I had been saying Rick Ocasek for years. I learned it was Ocasek. So
I heard that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's acceptable.
Okay.
You know, rock and roll, different world. Also, he spelled his name totally. There was an extra letter in there, you know, before he became famous. So, back to our topic. This is where, we're learning a lot about it. So let's go to the one guy who really does know all about it. You know, former Russian intelligence officer, Vladimir Putin, right? I mean, is this like the best of days for him? How can this be bad for him? You know what I mean? It's sort of like, oh, the Ukraine is a big problem and the president's doing all this stuff. And it looks like the president's, you know, political stuff is all wrapped up in that. And I don't like the Ukraine. I don't like being accused of meddling in U.S. elections. Everybody's talking about the Ukraine. My sense is that Putin's sort of like, you know, I think I'll go ride my horse. You know, this is good. This is good times because attention isn't on him. It's on someplace else. And where it gets really interesting to my mind is exactly what you're talking about. Because underpinning all of this is, you know, a storyline that, weirdly enough, I suspect a lot of pieces get. You know, Manafort. Where was Manafort fooling around before he went to work with Trump?
Ukraine.
Ukraine, right?
Yeah.
Where were a lot of these players fooling around before they ended up working with Trump? Ukraine. What did Russia do in, you know, recent years as regards Ukraine? I don't know, grab like a fifth of the country, right? You know?
Well, and they're certainly actually encroaching on the eastern part of the country right now.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if we were to step back a little bit and say, you know, with what's kind of the center of this whole thing? It is Ukraine. And it does touch on Russia. It does touch on the U.S. It touches on 2016. It also clearly now touches on 2020. And, you know, I have to be quite honest with you. The smart cable news network would open a Kyiv, if that's how you pronounce it, bureau. Because it strikes me that an awful lot is going to circle back, you know, keep kind of coming back into this vortex. And there are people in jail now. There are people going to jail. There's a president facing impeachment. And it all circles back in this way. And I don't begin to think that there's anybody who has a full and deep understanding of that except Wilbur Ross. And I'm pretty sure Wilbur Ross knows it all. And I don't say that joking.
No, to be continued.
Yeah.
All right. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.